God damn it. Well, okay, we'll start over again. Sorry, everybody. I've got levels now. I'm going to keep my levels in front of me so I can keep track of them. All right, I got levels again. So, sorry, everybody. Welcome to You Have Tread on Me. I guess I got some editing to do on this one. I got some dead air to cut out. User operator error. I tried again to get it to go, but I've got levels now, so I'm showing as live. Can I get a sound check from somebody, though, as soon as you can hear this? Let me know. Just drop it in the chat room. You can hear me, and we'll be good to go. But in the meantime, I want to thank everybody that's listened in. We've been on the air now for about 3 years, give or take a few months here and there for hiatuses and just breaks in general.
Still not on.
Still not on.
Still not on.
I'm showing we're on.
Yeah, but look at the chat. Nobody's responded.
I've usually got a delay. I've got a lag of about a minute. Hello?
No,
hello?
Go ahead. Hello? Talking, but I see nothing yet indicating that they hear anything. I'll be back in a second.
Well, I don't even know if we're live yet or not. Seems I'm having troubles here.
Said it's working.
Okay, we're working now. Good. Okay, well, sorry about that, everybody. Listen, I really apologize for that. User-operator error, some garbage, man. I keep getting bumped off the system, it seems. I want to thank everybody for coming in and listening in. I'm going to go through this again for the second or third time now. I've been on the air for about 3 years now. And we had probably one of the largest shows on the internet back in the days. And that was because of you guys and your support and everything. I want to thank everybody that's ever supported us, spread the word about us, joined in, all my past guests and everything. I know that over the last several months, my site has really not been updated at all because my old producer and webmaster, Dave, just did not have the ability anymore to do it. He went offline pretty much. So, with that being said, I've got my new webmaster. I got the old webmaster, my original webmaster, Icono, back. So after this show tonight, we're going to get to work on the website. And it should be by this weekend, by this Sunday show, the site's going to have a whole new look. He's going to completely redesign the site. Still going to have the same old logo and everything like that. But we're going to be updated. We're going to get back all the old archives. Those are all going to be updated, as well as my old Blog Talk archives are going to be up here as well. Thanks to Mass Lady, she was diligent enough when those archives were when those shows were being done. She would pull the archives down immediately. So because of her, I'm able now to get all my old archives from Blog Talk since you can't download from Blog Talk anymore. So we're going to be putting those up as well here. And over the last 3 or 4 years, everybody's been asking me to, you know, start getting out some stuff for them. You know, bumper stickers, T-shirts, whatever. I guess everybody loves the logo. So after 4 years, I finally decided to get some bumper stickers and T-shirts, hoodies. And don't be messing with me there. Anyways, we're getting bumper stickers, hoodies, T-shirts, and yes, yes, we're even getting that flag that everybody's been demanding of me for the last 3.5, 4 years. So we're going to get that up here. Joe Martino's book is going to be for sale. You're going to be able to just click on the link, buy the book, and it'll go out to you very shortly. Autographed copies will be available. I already had a few orders for autographed copies, so those will be going out here very shortly. Topic tonight is going to be... Hell, I forgot what the topic tonight is going to be. It's going to be infiltration. I did this damn intro 3 or 4 times now. I forgot what the topic's going to be. Topic tonight's going to be infiltration. We're going to be discussing the who's, the how, the wherefores, the whys. Who's doing it, why they're doing it, who's the target of it. But more importantly, during the second hour, you guys are going to want to stick around for this one. We're going to have some really interesting, we're going to be talking about, so don't go anywhere. So with that being said, my guest tonight for this episode of Tar and Feather is Gary Hunt. Welcome to the show.
And for the fourth time, thank you, Randy.
You know, we might not always be on time, but damn it, we're here.
let's see, what was the topic? Oh, infiltration, that's right. Anyway, I'm going to go back in history a little bit just to give you an idea of how insidious infiltration can really be. I enlisted in the Army at a young age, 18, and then volunteered to go to Vietnam at a young age still, and ended up having to extend 6 months military service to get my 1 year tour in Vietnam. I got out of the Army in 1967, and within a year I was involved in the anti-war movement. So we're talking about 1968, 69, that era. Now, the government, now I'm going to post a link to this PDF, Provoca. The University of Chicago did a study of the infiltration of the anti-war movement. Now, these were not people talking about the overthrow of government. They simply wanted to end the war. They didn't have grandiose plans of changing government or anything like that. But the government set up SDS, Students for Democratic Society chapters. The government actually established those chapters so that people would join them, and they had influence then over people that were involved in the anti-war movement, which diverted them away from the direction that the national SDS was intending to go. You read that PDF, and it is rather lengthy. You're going to see how involved their infiltration is. But infiltration is when you introduce into any form of opposition anything that will cause an influence on that takes it away from its intended purpose. It's done by a number of methods. The most common one, the most recognized one, I should say, is probably an agent. There are undercover agents in every branch, just about every branch in government. I was surprised in 1997 when I found out that IRS actually has a school for undercover agents. The Internal Revenue Service has a school for undercover agents. In fact, one of the instructors for that school, and we'll talk about a man named Quigley a little later, one of the instructors from that school actually testified against some friends of mine in Florida. What does the IRS need an undercover agent for? To infiltrate something as peaceful as the Florida Common Law Court and the Committee of Safety, Central Florida Committee of Safety. I guess when you live in a police state, they want, and what was the Stasi in East Germany? The Stasi wants to be involved in everything. They want to know everything that's going on. And infiltration is their method of finding out whether their effort is to divert it or just understand what's going on. To gather intelligence, they will infiltrate just about any group. Now, there's another element of infiltration, and it's called the agent provocateur. Now, this is the agent that goes into that group, infiltrates that group, and begins promoting something that will end up resulting in the destruction of that group by one means or another, primarily legal, to get them in, talk them into doing something that will get them all arrested and thrown in jail. And I think we've all seen four old men in Georgia recently that have been subjected to that consequence. It wasn't quite an agent there. It was an informant, and we'll get into that a little later, too. But infiltration is there. It's a reality. When I went up to Idaho, this is back about 94, 95, to see where Ruby Ridge was, go up and look around and see where this whole event surrounding Randy Weaver occurred, the people I talked to up there were telling me that over half the people in Richard Butler's Aryan Nations Church were informants working for the government. And interestingly, that's exactly what they were trying to get Randy Weaver to do, to get him to commit a crime by sawing off a shotgun short, charging him with a crime, get him to sign a plea agreement, and then that plea agreement required that he provide them information on what was happening in the church that already had all these other informants. However, from an intelligence standpoint, if you can get a bunch of people in there, some of them will rub shoulders with the guys that might advocate violence. you've got more people to influence an outcome. So there are a lot of effects that can have, that can be had by that type of informant. Now, over half the people in that church were informants. There might have been some agents too. Think of the significance of that. Over half the people in the church were informants. All the militia busts that we know about, there's been infiltration in them, whether by informants or agents. In some cases, we see an agent's name recognized. In Georgia, for example, an agent sold them, fraudulently sold something claiming to be an explosive, but it wasn't really an explosive. But there were informants as well in Georgia. There were agents and informants in the Schaefer Cox bust. There were agents and informants in Richard McLaren's Republic of Texas, in the Montana Freeman, in the West Virginia Militia, the Viper Militia in Phoenix, Arizona. It just permeates the patriot community nowadays. Now, we think, well, there's only one bad cop. That's the one that got busted when they busted this militia, and he was exposed for what he was doing. Now, if you want to believe that, go right ahead. Feel fat, dumb, and happy, and think that in your group there's not been somebody either planted in there or converted when he became a member, after he became a member, that is not working for the government instead of the group that you're a member of. How do you know? Is there any way to know if that guy is an infiltrator by one of the methods in your group? You won't know until he's in a position that he has to expose himself to testify against you in court. So this brings up another dilemma. What are the consequences of this infiltration? What effect can it have, not just in getting people busted, but maybe in redirecting the effort or the energy and suppressing certain thought within that organization? Well, you'll see a lot of people say, don't talk about anything that would be illegal. Well, I got to agree with that. Don't talk about anything that would be illegal if there's a possibility that anybody in your group is a bad guy. But if we don't do anything illegal, we're not following the steps of founding fathers. They did a lot of illegal things. In today's dollars, they dumped millions of dollars worth of tea in Boston Harbor. That's violent. That's destruction of private property. They tarred and feathered people. But the infiltration they sent spies out to listen in taverns. They gathered intelligence that way. They did not join the committees of safety. They did not join the militias. In fact, most people were quite open about what their sympathies were. They were Whigs or Tories. So they didn't have back then this massive infiltration, this desire for control by the government to know everything that's going on, no matter where it's going on. So when somebody says, don't talk about anything that's illegal, they could be trying to dissuade you because they work for the government, or they might just be scared themselves. Don't heed that advice. Just qualify that advice. Don't talk about anything that would be illegal unless you are absolutely sure that the people you're talking with are absolutely on your side. So we've talked about the agents and informants. Agents are paid. This guy named Quigley, I'm going to talk about him. This is 1997. I had to testify in the Florida Common Law Court trial. In 1995, I think it was, we started the Central Florida Committee of Safety. Peaceful group like the ones today. There's no advocacy of any overthrow of government or anything like that. Basically, what we were looking at is getting a civil body politic for the militias to subordinate to and to work together to achieve goals. Not political and not advocacy, but goals that were in the interest of protecting us and perhaps restoring constitutional government. There's this fellow that was very nice, endearing to everybody. His name was Robert Chapman. Now, the application for the Committee of Safety fortunately said name, and he wrote Robert Chapman. And right after the name, it said, is this your real name, yes or no? And he checked yes. There's no place to ask, if you check no, there's no place to write your real name. We just wanted to know if it was your real name. We thought that there's a degree of integrity in this, and we didn't realize then how significant that was. But then down at the bottom, there was a signature line, and it had a Prinz seal, Prinz, which legally means I am self-notarizing this document. I swear that it is correct because I have seal after my name. So he signed it, Robert Chapman. Now, when I testified in 1997, I still had some of the records and the forms from the Central Florida Committee of Safety. And Robert Chapman had written Robert Chapman. He said, yes, this was his name, and he signed it under seal. That is an oath. Well, this guy's real name was Robert Quigley. He was the IRS undercover agent. And in the introduction in his qualifications, he explained that he was an instructor in the IRS undercover school. Now, this guy was real nice. He had an old beat-up Corvette. But he would give people rides to meetings. He was just endearing to everybody. He occasionally asked questions that are kind of pointed. But, he, you know, a lot of people asked kind of pointed questions. So that wasn't anything unique in itself. Now, to give you an idea of how these people work, I've got to get the address, but there's a transcript in this most recent occurrence down there. I'm going to put up a URL now. This is something that's happening in Florida right now, and there's a reference to the article. Let me tell you about a man named Quigley, but there's also a link to what's called record of activity. Yeah, record of activity. That record of activity is kind of interesting because you'll see a BC, Bob Chapman. Now, that's Quigley. He's the agent. And there are some missing pages, apparently, because they have a numbering system that I don't understand, but there's a big gap in there. But you can see the kinds of questions that he subtly asks in there. When you see BC ask a question, and in one case I think he was rather persistent in trying to get an answer, you'll see exactly how these guys operate. These are the words out of his mouth, off of his tape, transcribed into a record for the trial. That's exactly how they work. Understand that, and you'll see that you may have people in your group that are like that, but are they bad? No, because these guys are trained to not act bad. They're trained to act like people might act in a normal situation, and that's how well-trained they are when trained paid agents, join your organization. Informants, a whole different element. But these are the people then that might have been a part of your group already, but something happened. And they might come later after something happened that turned them. They might come later and join you. Their objective is not the weekly paycheck. Their objective is to stay out of prison. And it's a nice place to stay out of. I've never been there. I've been in jail, but I don't think I would like the idea of going to prison, so I'm going to do my best to avoid it. But these are the people that, and Larry Meyer was that page I sent you to. Larry Meyer was offered a plea agreement, and there are five pages there. For whatever reason, his attorney did not allow us to see the rest of the plea agreement that they'd offered Larry. So I've got to get a link now and post it. And this, this, however, is taken from a plea agreement that was offered to a friend of mine in Florida when he was charged on relatively stupid, minor charges, but they together added up to the possibility of spending a little time in jail. And got to find that. I thought I was organized. I guess I'm not. The idea here is once they got him trapped, they could use him for any purposes. And there's the link. So they could use him for any purpose. If he was involved with people at that point in time, they would, say, gather information. They might ask him to join another organization, and he doesn't want to go to prison, so he's willing to go along. And they'll be nice guys. They'll say, look, we're not going to try and get anybody in trouble. We just want to know what's going on. But when you read that article in Foremost Amongst Us, you'll see that the U.S. attorney is the sole determinant of the truthfulness of the information provided by the informant. The U.S. attorney is the sole determinant as to the truthfulness of the information provided by the informant. So you go back to the guy and you tell him the truth about what's happened. And he said, well, that's not good enough. That's not truth, or that's not satisfactory. That's not what we have you for. You need to do better. So the guy goes back to the group. Can't do any better. Nobody's talking about anything, whether they're talking about it out of his view or they're not talking about it at all. Doesn't matter. Finally, they start putting a little pressure on. Look, you've got to get something for us or you're going to go to prison. You're going to serve out your term. And that's what the plea agreement says. You will serve your whole term if you violate the conditions of this agreement. So the guy goes back, and they still won't talk about it. And the U.S. attorney says no good, so he goes back again. He starts saying, you know, I think I can get some explosives if we could bomb an IRS building or something like that. And so people start listening. Well, we've never thought about that before. No, I don't think we want to bomb an IRS building. No, we can do it. You know, I can get the explosives, and I think we can come up with a good plan. So all of a sudden, people who would not have even considered it in the past might begin considering something, not with the intention of pursuing it, rather with, hey, okay, we'll go ahead and talk about it. We don't have any explosives. You know, it might be good training for the future. And this is kind of what happened with the Viper militia in Arizona back in the 90s. They did go out and blow up some explosives in the desert. They did talk about blowing up government buildings, but they never developed a plan to ever do that, and they always talked about if the need ever arises. Wasn't good enough. They all went to prison. How insidious this entrapment can become, even from an informant, somebody that was your best buddy from when you were 4 years old to when you graduated high school and since then. But he got busted. And so now he's turning towards the government because it's the only way he can stay out of prison. And he is number one. Screw you. He and his family, for providing for his family, staying out of prison is all that matters to him. His wife and two kids won't have food if he goes to prison. All his family will reject him if he goes to prison. The pressure on him is immense, and the government knows how to twist that and manipulate him a step at a time to bring him into compliance with what they're trying to do. Now, there was a chat on the RAM Facebook page, or discussion on the RAM Facebook page, and I know it was an oversight because somebody suggested that I said 10% of the people in the Patriot community are government informants. Now, that's probably ridiculously low because Randy provided me some information a while back verbally, and he's still got to find that link for me if he can. But he said
I just got back online.
He said that he read an article that says the government admits that 1 out of 7 Patriots is an agent. 1 out of 7. That's 14%. That blows my 10% all to hell.
This was written in a document that the DOJ published back in 72, 74, 76 era. So many things came out back in the 72 to 76 era. It's hard to keep track of everything, but somewhere between 72 and 76.
So that was the era of the Pravaka PDF.
Yes, exactly. During that era, the DOJ published a document, an internal document that was later. Leaked out or published publicly anyways, that basically they claim that 1 in 6 people within any activist or patriot group at the time, we've got to remember this patriot movement is over 70 years old now, 80 years old almost, but 1 in 6 at that time were either actually paid agents or informants working for the DOJ.
So 1 in 6 would be 16%, roughly.
About 16%. And that was back in 72 to 76. And that was long before the whole militarization of our police departments and the incredible amount of infiltration that's gone on since then.
So back then, when the enemy of government was people that say, we don't want no more war. They're not aggressive. They're not violent. They don't want any more war. And we've got 16% infiltrating. Perhaps the 10% is best defined as ridiculously low, because that's agents, and that's what you'll read about in Provoca. What about informants, though? Let's go to Butler's church. I don't know if there were any agents there at all, but over half, 50%, were informants. So if I take just the 50%, one half exactly, and the 16%, I've got 66%. So my estimate is 10 to 60% tending towards the 60%, the latter number. Now, it seems high because nobody's been busted in your group yet. Nobody's tried to provoke us to blow up a government building yet. But wait. Why not blow up a government building? Back in the 90s, between 93 and 95, how many people talked about blowing up a government building? Also amazing is how quickly they ran from that thought when a government building got blown up. But the government's blown up a church. I'm sorry, they burnt up a church. It was almost as quickly as blowing it up, because it took about 14 minutes for that church to burn to the ground. It was so dry and tender. They shot up and burned the house that Gordon Cole was in. They just shot up Donald Scott's house. They killed Vicki Weaver at her doorstep. George and Linda, defending their liberties, ended up going to the electric chair because they killed a cop while defending their liberties. And, you know, the list goes on. So they're, you know, is there a war going or not? I mean, everybody talks about a line in the sand. I think the tide came in and moved the line. It keeps moving every year. Every time something happens, that line moves a little further away from us for some reason. You know, at the Alamo, theoretically, they drew the line and everybody stepped over it. How do we define that line? Well, when you've got as much infiltration as we have in our community, it's very difficult to define the line. Now, there's a friend of mine that wrote a blog the other day about leaderless resistance, and what he realized is maybe you'll post the URL in the chat, but there's a real misunderstanding about leaderless resistance. People think it's total anarchy. No, it's not. What it is, and I wrote an article called Our Security Team, and between the two of them, you can kind of begin to get a picture of what can be done and how it should be done if you want to, at this point, just prepare and get ready for things. But if you want to retaliate against all the stuff the government's doing, I don't want to be an advocate of violence, and I'm not a committee of safety, so I guess I can say it, but perhaps you need to begin thinking about taking the battle back to those that began the battle a long time ago. But if you're going to do it, read Leaderless Resistance, the article. He hasn't posted it yet. Well, read that article and then read Our Security Team and understand the nature of the security you need to assure yourself of if you're going to talk about anything that might be misconstrued even to be an advocacy of violence. I'm not saying don't talk about it. I'm saying watch where you talk about it, because it could cost your family your support for a long period of time if somebody gets in that group, either before or after you start it, and is not looking out for our best interest. And there's a very possibly a greater likelihood that he will be working for the government, that 60%, than for you unless you are extremely careful in selection. Has he been charged with a crime? Did he call one day and say, hey, man, I got to borrow some money. I got to get bailed out of jail. If he did, what happened to that case? Did he get a plea agreement? Did they just drop the charges and walk away from it? Or did he get jail time or a fine or something? Or did the jury find him not guilty? These become very significant things. In fact, one that Randy and I talked about a little over a year ago was a fellow named Charles Dyer. He was on the radio program. We were talking to him, and I asked him what happened in that trial, and he said, I was acquitted. I said, do you have any paper proof of it? And he says, yes. Would you provide us some? He never did. He said yes, but he never did. Now, a few months back, somebody provided me a copy, and yes, he was acquitted by a jury. And it wasn't until I got that copy of the jury record that I realized that he was not trapped into being an informant by doing a plea agreement on that grenade launcher trial. So you don't know what's happened to somebody unless you know their record. Let's look at other people that claim military background in bravado, and I was a sniper, and I was this, and I was that. Simple question. The one question you have to ask him after you've written down all these claims that he's made is, could we have a copy of your DD-214? Well, I don't have one. Well, hell, that's the easiest thing in the world to get from the government. It's easier to get that than a 1040 if you're a veteran, if you have military service. And I don't know any veteran, ex-military service, that doesn't keep copies of the DD-214 around. Mine are nearly 50 years of 45 years old, and I've still got 7 or 8 copies just in case I need them. Ask him for a DD-214. See if he's telling the truth. You know, we talk about vetting people. Now, when I had my business in Florida, I didn't subscribe to the standard practices of business. I looked all over until I found an employment application that wasn't too intrusive, but I wanted the background of my people that were coming to work for me. List the last 5 jobs you have. Why did you leave there? Have you ever been arrested? Have you ever been convicted of a crime? To get a job, you're asked these questions. Is it an intrusion for you to go down and get an employment application or make one yourself as a group and say, here's the application, fill it out? And then check some of the information out. See if he's being honest with you. I imagine you'll catch a lot of guys that way. If he said, I work there, and you don't think he worked there for some reason, call there and say, did he work there? And if they say yes, well, at least that one's right. If you catch him in a lie, though, maybe it's not the only lie. So why don't we as patriots start thinking like people in business with even greater concern? Let's vet the people we're talking about. I don't mean go on the internet and search for his name. If you want to search for my name on the internet, you're going to find out all kinds of things about me, of which maybe 10% are true, that there are a lot of Gary Hunts, so it gets kind of confusing, but that is not vetting somebody. I mean, the government could quite easily go in and write a story and post it all over the internet telling how good Randy Mack was if Randy Mack wasn't good, or how bad Randy Mack was if Randy Mack was good. And if you do a search and you get 300 stories that say this, exactly the same thing, is probably a damn plant anyway. But I've known Randy for a long time, and I have intimate faith in Randy. I would trust him with my life if I met him.
One of these days, maybe. You got to come up here, though. I'm never leaving the state of Ohio again, man.
Well, I'm trying to get out of the state of California, but I can't afford to until I sell a house. Anybody interested in 5.5 acres, Northern California, wonderful country. We have our own well, good pasture land, tolerable farmland so you can grow things. But we need to start thinking along that line. That why not have an admission application to join something? Rather than just say, hey, I vetted that guy and I know what I'm doing. get him to write it down and sign it, too, because now he's telling you in black and white, oh, you misunderstood me when I said I'd never been arrested. No, you wrote it down and signed it. You misunderstood me when I said I was a sniper. I meant I could have been a sniper. No, you wrote it down and signed it. So if you want to vet somebody, get them to commit to what they want to claim to be first. Employment, criminal record, military service. Get them to write it out and sign it and date it. And then vet them. And then you've got something to compare to. You know, you're vetting him. Oh, did he say he was a sniper? Or did he say he wanted to be a sniper? What did he say? Well, it's in black and white. You got it in front of you. If he's lied to you, it might have just been bravado. It might have been to try and get into where he shouldn't belong. But at any rate, it's safe to say that we would probably be better off without this guy in this group. Now, do you need him? Are you going for the numbers? I see people talk about, we have 17,000 members on our Ning site. Interesting. Try this sometime. Go to the members list on a Ning site. Up on the top right, you'll have a little box, sort by alphabetically, most recent, latest activity. Hit the latest activity one. Go down about three or four pages and see how long ago the latest activity was by the, you know, 150th person. 6 months? Wait, you say 17,000 people. In 6 months, you've only had 150 people active on this site? We've got to think about things like this. We've got to realize that numbers are nothing, really. It's not 17,000. We've only got 150 people that are active on this site. Realistically, that number is 100. If we've got a militia, is it nice to say that we've got 300 members in our militia, or is nice to say that we have 20 good men in our militia? Now, when we talk about vetting, it's kind of curious. You know, here comes the boss, and he says, okay, here's the employment application. You will take it, make it out. Well, in employment, I can't say, boss, can I see your employment application? But we're talking about communal activity here. We're talking about militia. So I can go up to my captain and say, can I see your application? I have every right to see his as much as he has to see mine, because there is no boss here. We're all working together. We have just elected him to command us, but I want to see who's commanding me. So vetting can work in both directions. If you're just, somebody says, we're going to vet you, and you say, oh, okay. You're living in the world of today in the United States of America, where the government says this and you bend over or whatever they've asked you to do. How high? We can vet back upstream in any activity we participate in, and we should. SDS chapters were started by government agents in the 60s and 70s. If they had vetted the people that started the chapter, started the militia, started the Committee of Safety, started the Tea Party, started any organization, perhaps they wouldn't have had that problem. So, if we want to avoid infiltration, we need to start sharing ideas, not knee-jerk ideas, but realistic ideas on how we can avoid infiltration into the Patriot community. And I'm sure a lot of you have a lot of good ideas out there, so before we go to the second hour, which we've got some rather interesting things to talk about, Randy, how about we see if we have any questions about what we have discussed so far? Don't get ahead of us, please, because Randy's got this program planned out for you to make it as exciting as possible.
You know, we've covered a lot of information here, and you know, you and I have discussed this topic so often, and you know, growing up where I did in South Central, I saw infiltration firsthand. I saw informants firsthand. I saw people that you thought were your best buddies, you would trust them with your life, and next thing you know, they're getting arrested, or your people are getting arrested except them. You know, infiltration was commonplace back in South Central when I was growing up. So, you know, this is one of those topics. You know, it's such a ambiguous topic as well, because, as we mentioned before, you know, these trained these trained infiltrators that the government has, these are actual government agents who have gone through extensive psychological testing to find that perfect infiltrator, someone who can blend in, someone who can mingle with any crowd, someone who will not crack under pressure if they begin to be questioned, someone who is not afraid to go into a crowded room with a bug on them or a mic, someone who's not going to break, and they get paid well for this. You know, they're in this, you know, the paycheck is part of it, but you know, a lot of them actually believe in what they're doing. And then there's the informants. You know, I knew a gentleman up in Canada when I was living up there. A friend of mine, his brother was an informant. The FBI actually hired him to go out and infiltrate some groups in the U.S. They brought somebody in from Canada. You know, he was a big activist back in the 60s or back in the 60s and 70s. I guess he was somewhat of a famous name. I'd never heard of him myself, but they contacted him. He was in need of money. That was his motivation to go do it. You know, trying to figure out how to find an informant is damn near, like you mentioned, it's hard. It's impossible, damn near, because this is what they've been trained to do. They've been trained to go in there, blend in, become part of the group, and not get caught. So,
well, it's easy to find them after they've caused the damage.
Yes, after they've caused the damage, but until then, you know, you don't know who they are. But as Gary had mentioned, you know, if anybody's got any questions or comments on here, feel free to drop them in the chat room now. I know that the chat room has been going at a mile a minute now. If anybody's got any questions, feel free to drop them in the chat now. If I've missed a question of yours, drop it in there and I'll ask Gary. If you want to come on and talk to Gary or myself or ask questions, make a comment, you have to come on through Skype. Just hit me up on Skype. My contact info on Skype is Randy_Mac. Just drop me a Skype comment. Let me know you want to come on, and I'll bring you on. My toll-free number is down since I left Canada. It'll be coming up in the future, but not right now. So until then, Skype is the only way to come on. So if you have Skype, you can come on, and we'll bring you on. You can ask your comment, or you ask your question, make your comments, give your 2 cents, tell us we're full of shit, whatever it is.
And while we're waiting for those questions to come rolling in, I see somebody on the chat that I'm familiar with. I've been talking to him over a year. He's a nice guy. He's very ambitious and wants to do a lot of things. And I think that he might feel a little apprehension over something that happened recently. But I want to assure him it was strictly the disruption of the meeting, not any suspicions of anything else that resulted in what occurred, that you are not in disfavor or accused of anything beyond not being conducive to the conducive flow of meeting. That said, that's my feeling on it. Informant, paid citizen or federal agent. Basically, there's two elements. There's the informant who is not paid. He's receiving a favor. I'll go back to that trial in 1997, the Florida Common Law Court. There was a member of the jury named Matthew Finch. Matthew Finch had signed a plea agreement with the government. Now, this wasn't infiltration, but he had signed a plea agreement. But in the plea agreement, it says, I plead guilty to the felony of this. And then for doing certain things, he got his sentence reduced, and he got his fines reduced and everything. Federal law prohibits a felon from being on a jury, a federal jury. He was on the jury. The court knew it, but they didn't do anything. And when it came up after trial, when we found out he was a convicted felon, and if you plead to something, you're convicted as if the jury did it. When you plead guilty, you're convicted. The court defended him. But interestingly, the local court, the Hillsborough or Pinellas County, wherever he was on, signed the plea agreement, he was still on probation, he had community service, and he still had some outstanding fines, and he still had to spend some weekends in jail. They dropped all of these, the fines, the remainder of the probation, all these other things, because he had been of service to the government. Now, they rewarded this juror after the fact. So an informant is rewarded in usually other than cash. I suppose they could give him money, too. But he's trying to stay out of prison or otherwise gain favor from the police state government, where an agent of government is paid. His job, his paychecks comes because he's infiltrating. We can go back to the 50s, and there was a guy that wrote a book about him infiltrating. He was a government agent, and he infiltrated the Hell's Angels and wrote a book about it, all the nasty stuff about Hell's Angels. So the distinction is informants are people that get entrapped into doing it or volunteer to get out of some sort of trouble, where agents are people that are actually employees of government. So there's a difference between the two.
All right, Gary.
If I missed any other questions that I missed?
Well, actually, we got two people that wanted to come on. We got Sleepy Salsa here, and we got Smiter on board with us as well. So Smiter hit me up first. Why don't we go with Smiter first, and then we'll jump over to Sleepy Salsa afterwards.
Smiter.
Hello.
Hey, Smiter, how are you doing?
I'm doing okay. This is a pretty exciting topic. I just was going to mention that I think the DD-214 pops to mind as a really good vetting tool, because it kind of gives you an immediate way to see if someone's full of crap or not. You know, there's so many cyber warriors out there that exude all of this ability that it's of great value to different groups. But it's also pretty disappointing when you bring somebody into your first round of grip and grins, you know, trying to bring them into the family, and you find out they're not what they say. The DD-214 is valuable only because if you ask for it, like Gary said, everybody's got a copy of their DD-214, you know. And it doesn't really matter what it is, but if you're representing yourself somehow and you find that someone's not being truthful, then that should be pretty much the end of business right there, I think. Because if you don't have the integrity of your people, it doesn't really matter what you have. Or if you find out that somebody's being dodgy, now you can actually go back and maybe even protect yourself in the future if things go completely pear-shaped. You know, it's like, oh, this paid informant here who's on the payroll made these statements, but none of them seem to jive with anything. So, you know, where's the weight? You know, in the worst case scenario, I guess if you're in front of a jury and you're asking the jury to say, what do you guys think about this? This guy doesn't seem to be able to keep his story straight. I would just rather see that that headache never even progresses, you know, and there's probably a lot of other things that you can do. I know in the Navy, when senior enlisted guys are selected for E7, that there's quite a rigorous process that they go through, an initiation. And some of that is really just their acts that are based on trust, and you kind of do a bit of a mind fuck on people to see if they really do trust you, if they're willing to release themselves to the sacred order of these senior enlisted guys, you know, and lean on them or not. If somebody's resistant, I think that that's a cause for concern, or pause at least, you know, or how much responsibility and access are you going to give people? Because we've all seen it, folks. You don't have to look back that far. You know, 5-10 years, there's been pretty common threads there. Gary's definitely got the history book squirreled away that explains it all, but I've seen it, and I always notice, wow, it's always some guy on the inside who just happens to have this right amount of information to pin people to the wall for something. And everybody knows that a witness's testimony is pretty valuable. So that's pretty much where I wanted to go with this. I could talk for hours on this topic, but I'd like to hear what Sleepy's got to say, too.
Well, before we go to Sleepy, if somebody has lied on their application and you find that on the DD-214, and understand the DD-214 doesn't tell everything. I got all the way up to spec 4, but I left as a PFC after 3.5 years and 1 year in a combat zone. So it doesn't say that I ever got to spec 4, but it does tell the schools I went to, it tells the MOSs I had, and it tells the rank when I got out. So anything of significance will show on the 214.
You're absolutely
right. But if somebody has lied to you, that doesn't mean you necessarily have to kick him out, but you realize this guy lied, so he's going to be a private unless and until things happen where we can give him a little more trust than that. So you create a trust factor around him, because we do need all the bodies we can get.
And that's why I said, you know, and over the years I've listened to Gary, I some of his philosophies I guess I agree with, and one is I hate to disband or dismiss any patriot, you know, where normally, you know, they might have some lame habit that you would find unacceptable. In the serious of things, somebody who can serve a function within your group is of great value. You know, one person is really worth 10 in my book. And if those are people you really trust, and then you have absolute fanatical Pope-like, you know, dedication from, then awesome. But do you really? And in the stories that we've been talking about tonight, you have people that are well-regarded within the community, that are nice, happy, go lucky. You wouldn't even suspect this guy until, bam, you know, he slams the whole community with, you know, a torpedo. That's kind of how I see it.
Yeah, when he's the witness for the government. Now, when you read Informants Amongst Us, too, you'll see at the end there's a suggestion. We've got a kind of dilemma in this country right now is if a guy's charged with a crime and he's facing going back to prison, we can't hide him. There's nothing we could do. He would have to go underground and stay there with his family. However, if we ever pursue the plan for restoration of constitutional government, we would be in a different situation. If we were in a position where we could assure that he and his family were safe because we've taken over this community or this county and could bring him in and protect him from the government taking him and sending him back to prison, only at that time can you really expect that he will really come back to our side, because he's chosen a side now, and he knows that he and his family are safe in your area. But until then, it's very hard to bring an informant back in to any level of trust if he is an informant and he's been, you know, signed a plea agreement. But along the lines of keeping, you know, we need all the people we can get when the time comes that we need all the people we can get.
I agree with that, Gary. I really do feel that way. I just think that there's some things are unforgivable in the respect of the business that we're striving for here. You know, whether it's something of confidence that's compromised, whether it's something of negligence that's done, you know, because somebody just wasn't necessarily equipped or had the mental ability to make a good choice, okay, that's forgivable. But if it was a conscious act to actually undermine the organization, then I don't know how to reconcile something like that, because...
Well, then we have him in our clutches and we punish him. Yes, there are unforgivable sins, and if you do anything to have a fellow patriot incarcerated, I would say that's an unforgivable sin, because you chose for your freedom and created his imprisonment. That trade-off was untenable.
Well, you used a nice word, insidious, earlier, Gary, and I was thinking about that, all you have to do is really spring the trap when it comes to, you know, a judicial process. So, you know, if you think of like the Hutri and where they sit at today, most of them are chilling in jail still. And that's been, what, 2 years? And they haven't actually gone to trial, except for the guy who actually pleaded guilty on something. We don't really know that much about that, but
I think it's been about a year. Back in March, I wrote Thought Crimes, so it was less than a month, less than 2 months before that. So
it's not, you can't really argue the fact that it doesn't take much to disrupt an organization that's that tight or that small. All you got to do is throw enough charges at them to get them to have to answer it. And if the bail's set ridiculously high or their charges are significant enough, the average guy is not going to be able to come up with the financial support to maintain their freedom. So you got to sit it out in jail. and they already waived their rights, I think, to their speedy trial because they had to do a continuance because there was so much garbage that the prosecutors and the defense had to take a look at. I think it was really on the defense side. They're like, whoa, you guys have volumes of crazy stuff you want us to sift through here. And that, if you think of it as a tactic, is quite effective because you don't have to go in and Randy Weaver style somebody and kill them. You just have to take them out of action for a while. And all of their friends and everybody else are going to kind of feel like, wow, that was that sucked, and I don't want to have anything to do with that. So it's interesting. Yeah. The 32 people that we have in the room right now, if they're of like minds or whatever, I would suggest, and that kind of tends to put a target somewhere as well, whether it's through infiltration or direct action of, you know, an investigation or something that requires people to fill in the blanks so that the equation works out to take them off the street.
Yeah, the tendency when somebody gets busted that you know, there's a tendency in most people to realize the party's over and just actually crawl back in a hole. I've seen it happen a lot of times where, you know, somebody, Viper Militia in Arizona, a lot of people that knew the Viper Militia, when they got busted, these people just basically abandoned the Patriot cause completely. Not they weren't members of Viper, but reality hit home. These guys are going to be in prison for 5 to 7 years. And so the residual effect of a bust like that can be enormous if they have enough people they're close to. I from what I understand, Hootery, these weren't the most popular people in town, but other militias that have been busted, Schaefer Cox's, were popular people within their group. And I'm sure that the discouragement level in Alaska went up drastically when Schaefer Cox was arrested, and I guess a few of them were arrested, and then they find out they got three people in their top eight people. One's an agent and two are informants.
Well, it's curious. I mean, you could take the geography and the names out of the equation, and everything else, you know, seems to fit quite nicely as far as the approach to, okay, we need the conspiracy. We need the direct action, whether that's somehow having something in your possession, which is conveniently supplied to you by one of the informants or whatever. And, I find that kind of hilarious, too, because I guess I would be a little suspicious if someone said, hey, do you want this dump truck full of fertilizer or what?
Well, listen, we got, what else do we have? We got Sleepy Salsa, and we've also got Darren.
Let's wake Sleepy up.
We've also got Sleepy Salsa and Darren on. Let's bring on Sleepy next, and then we'll bring on Darren right after that.
Actually, Darren go next if he really wants to. I can wake him up. I might take a while.
I'm going to go back to sleep. Remember, we've got an exciting second half, which began already, and it wasn't you, Sleepy.
Oh, darn it.
All right, well, Darren, why don't you go ahead and unmute and come on in, okay?
Good evening. Can you hear me?
Yes.
Hey, you're loud and clear, Darren. How are you doing?
Good evening, Gary and Randy. It's been a long time. We haven't spoken.
It's been a while.
Yeah, things are going well down here. I have a question, but prior to that, I also have a bit of a suggestion. And this is interesting that you brought this subject up tonight. We, inside CECOM, we have our group is the Charter Oaks, and we recently separated a member for our own reasons. And the suggestion that I make, in order to protect your group, if you decide that a member is not suitable for your group, we offered this member the option of resigning in writing and separating himself fully in his own words. Had he declined, and he was gracious enough to do that, had he declined to do that, we would have had to separate him in writing and distribute that across the group so that if anything happens with him in the future, for whatever reason, we have it in writing that he is not affiliated with our group. Now, my question, Gary, it's more for you because I think you've done some research on this, but when you determine or discover either an informant or an infiltrator, do you think it's better to to completely expose the person to, in order to protect other groups so that he or she isn't able to join those groups, or do you think it's better to use them for misinformation? To feed the government?
We've had a conversation before, hold your friends close and your enemies closer. If you are in a position and you've got the intellect and the ability to take advantage of that situation, and you feel uncomfortable about somebody, you can always test him, too, this way, by, let's get broad about this, okay? So I've got somebody that I have a question about, but I'm not sure if he's as bad as maybe he might be. So find an old rifle and go park it somewhere. And tell them we've got a cache out there, and see if he goes, and we don't want it exposed, but I want you to know where it is, just because in case something happens to me, that rifle's going to be necessary. And you let him know about it. And or even without a rifle, what I've proposed to some people would be to, and this is to test the guy, go out in the woods and blaze a couple trees on the way out and dig a hole. Just dig down a foot or two and then throw the dirt back on loosely and put a rock on top of it and maybe put a little twig under the rock, barely sticking out, and tell this guy that this is where our cache is. Maybe take him out there or give him directions to it. Ideally, you'd take him out, and he says, well, are we going to dig it up? No, we want to leave it there. It's all protected. It's waterproof and everything. But I want you to know where it is if anything ever happens. And then you go back and just say, look, we trust you, and you know that's there, so... and I can't tell you what's in it. You'll find out if the need ever arises. And then you go back and just go on your way, and he goes on his. Go back a couple weeks later and see if that twig moved. If it did, he or somebody else has gone out there to look into that cache to see what is in it.
It's like the taped hair on the drawer or door.
Right. Same thing. You're testing the guy to see if he's got integrity, if you have doubts. But yes, also, if you want... I'm going to use this is a movie plot scenario, okay? Movie plot scenario. I want to rob the bank on the west side of town. So I tell the informant, we're going to rob the bank on the east side of town, and we've got not only the robbery team, but we've got people up on building tops with sniper equipment, and we're going to rob that, and anybody gets in our way, they're dead. Police department sends everybody in town to the east side of town, you know, the guy's bad because you proposed something that is extremely violent.
Right.
Now, if you were going to rob the bank on the west side of town, then obviously you've got all these guys over there, and you've added maybe 5-10 minutes to your getaway time by doing it. But so you can't, if you have doubts about somebody, it's nice to know for sure, because if you have to rely on the cops going to the east side of town, you got to know he's a bad guy. But there are a lot of ways that these people can be used if you hold them close to you and never divulge that you distrust them.
Well, you did preface your answer with, if you believe that you hold the mental ability and intellect to be able to manipulate this individual. But for the listeners out there, I mean, no one's going to say, no, I'm not smart enough to do this. Everyone's going to believe that they can manipulate an infiltrator. I'm saying once you have positively identified one and you know he's part of your group, do you believe it's better to notify the Patriot Movement, hey, this guy is working to hurt or harm groups however he can in order to protect himself or because it's his job, or do you believe it is better to use them for misinformation and feed this individual lines of crap that you want the government to hear?
Well, if he's a member of your organization only and you're not leaving a potential risk for another organization that he might be participating in, unless you can tell the leadership of that organization as well, this guy is bad, but don't just divulge it. Just hold it in case you need it. But if there's risk, if you're creating risk of even one person in your organization being hurt, I think the solution is to expose him if possible. And as some people would say, I forgot the acronym for it, but basically dispose of him if necessary. Not that I'm suggesting anything severe, but you have to weigh that with all the circumstances surrounding it. And due consideration by all the participants that should be involved in the decision process.
Thank you. Thank you for answering. I'm looking forward to the second half of the show, Randy. I think I know what it's about, and I might have some things to lend to that as well. All right. Good show, gentlemen, and I'll continue listening.
Hey, Dan, okay, thanks for coming on. It was really good talking to you again. It's been too long.
You too, Randy.
We're going to wake Sleepy up again. Sleepy, you awake?
Sleepy!
Yes, I'm right here. Hey, thanks for having me on, Rand. Do appreciate it.
Oh, no problem.
Well, and, you know, some of the guys in the chat room were kind of mentioning this on and off, too, that, you know, what's even possibly worse than your run-of-the-mill agent or informant would be more the provocateur. And specifically in terms of, like, internal balkanization or known vernacularly as infighting. And, you know, some of the guys in the chat room have been mentioning about that. So anything that can be done to essentially arbitrate between people who are infighting would definitely be a part of, like, an overall strategy to actually have people work together collaboratively in a constructive way against the enemy.
Let me comment on that right now. The newest member of the Patriot Unity Coalition, although he doesn't have the banner on his page, is Randy Mack of YouHaveTreadOnMe.com. I hear no applause. Ah, that's better, that's better. But yes, we have the common law court, and I know that one of the RAM site is set up for members of RAM, a way of looking into things like this. The Patriot Unity Coalition, you know, really we've just started looking at what we need to do within our own community, and we haven't even scratched the surface. But, yeah, how do we stop the infighting? I mentioned earlier that that somebody that's in the chat, I'm going to say, was disciplined. Not because he was bad, but because of the disturbances that were created. They were unnecessary, and they were non-productive of what was trying to be accomplished. So there can be different reasons for, and they don't have to be bad reasons for, removing an element that's just not letting you get your job done. And there are perhaps going to be some more in that same organization for the same reason. Not that they're bad guys, but they're just sticks in the spokes. They're keeping others from getting the job done. They're revisiting decisions that have been made in the past, things like that. So, yes, we do have to start looking very closely and looking at means, more importantly than anything, to get rid of people that might not be bad, but they're not good. They're not productive parts of the organization. Isolate them, remove them, whatever's necessary. If you offend them, this isn't the world that the United States gave you. There is no equality. If the guy's a problem, get rid of him. You're not going to get taken to court because you fired him and took his livelihood away. He can't do shit to you. But he can just be disruptive of your organization if you don't deal with the problems. So learn to deal with the problems without the emotional bonds that might go, oh, I feel sorry for the guy. No, I don't want to kick him out. That's not justification for not changing the cohesiveness of the organization. Okay, next one, Sleepy, go.
Well, yes, so this is something I've been kind of grappling with. I mean, folks know that I've gone publicly, have said certain things before, some of which have unfortunately gotten me into trouble. Other things were mostly ignored, but still fairly correct. And at the end of the day, what I think I'm getting, kind of realizing, is that in terms of either a revolution, a renaissance, a restoration, a counter-revolution, or whatever the end is that you want to manifest, it is neither semi-automatic carbines nor cardboard signs that brought such fundamental changes into being, but the character of the citizens of the formative nation that brought it into being. The threat would not be weapons or tools, but the character of the men and women who are the backbone of whatever the effort is that is fundamentally against the establishment. And what I'm noticing is that there's kind of a lack of character, at least from certain parties.
Well, you know, there are two causes for leadership. One is charisma, the other one's intelligence. I wrote an article, some thoughts on leadership back in the 90s when we were starting committees of safety, because there's a tendency to gather around the guy with charisma. Now, charisma, the only thing I have charisma is I know how to spell it, I think. I have none. And so I'm not the kind of guy that can stand up in a group and get them to cheer and all that stuff. I'm intelligent, but I don't want to be a leader. I have a place, and my place is learning and trying to teach what I'm a thinker, I guess. But leaders should be people that listen. George Washington had a council of war every time he was going to go into battle. And most often he abided by the decision, the majority decision of that council of war, even though he didn't like some of the officers. Only rarely did he override, by his command position, override the majority in the council of war. The Battle of Princeton, I think it was, when they crossed the Delaware, that one, that he was... it was recommended against, but he felt he had to do something. When they got across the river later than they expected, the Council of War recommended against. But he said, we're here and we're going to proceed. So twice in that one event, he overruled his Council of War. But in most cases, he abided by their decision, regardless of what it was. So leadership comes from listening and digesting everything that's put in and coming, creating that consensus among the members to go ahead rather than following a leader. And we've got this misconception of leadership in this country, too. We call the people in government leaders. They're not. They should be followers. We elected them because they said they were going to do this. They should follow that pattern. But we call them leaders. I don't. I refuse to call the president a leader, a governor a leader, the legislators leaders, but we always talk about the leadership of this country. The leadership of the country is us, but they don't listen to us, and that's one of our biggest gripes. They extended the Patriot Act. They increased the debt ceiling. They go to war without a declaration of war. Leaders have to listen, and if they can mold a consensus, that's one thing, which Roosevelt did quite well at the beginning of World War II. He developed a consensus in the entire country over a period of time. So he was a good leader in that respect. He didn't just go off and say, "Follow, you've got to do what I say." He encouraged people along. And so when we look at leadership in anything, in the militia, in any patriot organization, usually it's the person that starts it that moves into leadership right away because he started it. But the Arizona Committee of Safety had an interim chairman for 3 months before they elected the permanent chairman. It ended up being the same guy because the people respected his capacity to lead the group. I can't say if they made the right decision or not, but they made the decision, and it wasn't because he was there. It was because after this experience, they were comfortable with him continuing in that role of leadership. They were satisfied that he listened to them and wasn't trying to dictate things. So let me see if I can, back to you, Sleepy, and I'm going to post the thoughts on leadership link for those that might be interested. Next, Sleepy, wake up.
Yes, I'm here, sir. Well, yeah, I just wanted to
kind of... I know
where
you got your name, I think.
Well, I did want to, bring that to y'all's attention because going forward, I think it's important to kind of look back on what, mistakes were or what slipped through the cracks and try to improve it as much as possible. And I know you had more things to get to, so I didn't want to take up too much time so you guys can get into that other part of the broadcast.
Okay.
Anybody else have any questions out there? Anybody still online with us and here on the Skype call or anybody in the chat room? If you got your questions, put them out there now. If I've missed any in the chat room, go ahead and post them now. This chat's been moving at a mile a minute, so if I missed any of your questions or comments, post them in there. I'll ask Gary, or if they're for me, I'll give you my answers myself. If you want to come on Skype, my Skype name is Randy_Mac. Randy_Mac, just send me a Skype text or something, and let me know you want to come on. I'll bring you on.
Okay, so we've got really two subjects to cover, and we're going to have to go kind of quickly because we're running out of time. But one is the incident in Georgia. Shortly after the Georgia incident where these four old men, one of them couldn't even get up the stairs in his house without taking a breath. He was on oxygen all the time. The other, we don't really have the sequence, but what we do know, and I'm going to tell you, we can be effective in the Patriot community if we work together. Within about a week of that arrest being made, working with people that, they were in a state of disagreement with each other, but working with those people, we developed, all of us working together, developed who this guy was. We have pictures of him with the two guys that went to a particular meeting with Joe Sims. So we had identified, we do have the capability of identifying. Unfortunately, that's after the fact. That's after the damage is done, and four old men are going to spend the rest of their lives in prison probably because of it. But this guy was an informant, and there were agents involved because the agent was the one that was willing to sell. I don't remember exactly what he sold them, but one of the things he sold them was purported to be explosives, but it wasn't. It wasn't explosives, so that was fraud on the part of the government. He sold something and he lied about what it was. That's a crime if you or I do it, but it's not a crime if the government does it. But a question arose the other day about this, and it's a rather interesting moral dilemma. If he was going to, if they were going to spread rice and gas on the on the interstates in Atlanta, Georgia. Now there is some question about how effective that would be if it was just dropped on the roadways. Whether enough would get picked up in the air to cause any problems or not, but. That the technical aspect aside, let's look at the consequences of that type of action. The idea that innocent people would be killed, and the question that arose was, would you turn him in too? Because that's what Joe Sims is saying. These guys were going to kill all these people. I had to do something. So let's look at Joe Sims' argument realistically. He was involved with these guys for many months before they were arrested. There are tapes, and Joe's made some himself, and I'm sure some will come out of trial, and I'm even more sure that some others will not come out of trial. If Joe Sims was a good guy, he would have a tape of him trying desperately to talk these people out of this disastrous deed. This does not belong in the Patriot community. Killing innocent people on the highways is about the most obscene thing that we could possibly do and support a reasonable expectation that we would get the sympathy of the people on our side. So what the tapes that are going to be missing are, did Joe encourage them to do this, and now he's got an excuse saying, I had to turn them over to the police otherwise. Let's say we're a Patriot group, as a militia. And we've got a guy in there that is insistent that we do this, and he's constantly saying, we got to do this, we got to do this. What do? Turn him over to the police right away? No. We're militia. Why should we turn him over to the police? Police don't even belong in this country. They're the standing army. So let's deal with this guy. Sit down. You show us why this would be a good idea, because we think it's a bad idea. And he can't. So you discourage him. The first effort is to try and talk him out of it. The second effort, if he wants to go kill all these people and you're going to find out he's going to do it, why turn him over to the police and waste thousands of taxpayers' dollars on a trial? Take him out in the woods and get rid of him. The last resort, if it was going to happen tomorrow and we couldn't deal with it, let's go back to that second step. Go steal the stuff out of his shed where he stored it, because he's probably going to tell you when he brags about it. Take away his means. Take away his rifles. Steal from him whatever you have to keep him from carrying out this disastrous plot. The absolute last resort, if he is going to go ahead and you have no way of stopping him, would be to turn him over to the police and advise them that it's in progress and they better shoot to kill if you haven't already shot to kill. So, you know, Joe Sims' argument don't hold water. unless he has tapes that show how desperately he tried to talk them out of it, rather than so desperately finding an agent of government to sell them the things they need to carry out the deed. Joe Sims, if you happen to be here tonight, you got your head up your ass. So, that covers the one of them. And so, shall we go to the other one?
Let's go on to the other. Let's talk where we are. You know, we got 30 minutes left. Actually, we got 28 minutes left.
Okay, we got time.
Let's jump on that last
one. I got through that one pretty quickly, didn't I? Okay. Go on, Randy.
No, go ahead and jump in. Go ahead and lead into it, because I want to bring up some. I want to talk about this one as well.
Okay, let's talk about this. I just got through my part of that pretty quickly. Go ahead, Randy.
Go ahead, Randy. Okay. Well, you know, as everybody knows out there, you know, the Hootery were infiltrated recently. And, well, about a year ago. And apparently, from what I understand, now this is what I've been able to come up with. They had an FBI agent in there who was encouraging them to do certain things that would be considered illegal, going out and shooting cops. Now, this actions and this training were at the, you know, were encouraged by this agent.
Well, wait, don't get off track here. I don't have any indication of an agent, but an informant.
Well, an informant, sorry about that. My verbicide there. Informant. These actions were at the encouragement of an informant. Now, whether they agreed to them enthusiastically or whether it was offhand comments of, yeah, whatever, I don't know. But apparently an agreement was made. You know, they agreed with these actions or they agreed to the training, whatever it was. Now, this informant then runs and goes and tells whoever they're the informant for. The informants come in and they raid. And everybody goes in. And actually, the night that they were getting raided, I was on the phone with someone who had somebody that was actually had their boots on the ground watching as the police were taking off to go raid these people. And they were watching as the raid was going on. There was people from all different branches of our Boys in Blue, state, county, federal, local, and everybody got arrested. Now, as we're talking about informants, you know, there's always been these people amongst us who are in our movement, this patriot movement, if you will. And they come in for various reasons. Usually, the ones that I'm talking about, usually like are high profile, high publicity. They like the attention. Egomaniacal, if you will. They are out for self-aggrandizement. And we've been filled with lots and lots and lots of these people throughout the time. You know, everybody's always got a buck to sell and an angle to make that buck in, and they try and get you any way they can. Now, Gary was talking with me a few days ago about, you know, the report that he got about this Hootery case with the FBI report, and he mentioned a name that I am very well familiar with. Known of this individual for a long, long time.
We won't mention his name yet, though.
Won't mention his name yet, though. Now, apparently, this individual has a background, a criminal background. In fact, bank robbery. And he's been a very prominent member of the militia, especially in the 90s, not so much in the 2000s, but he's trying to make his comeback. I'd often heard a lot of things about this individual. And I always had my questions and my concerns about this individual because a lot of times he would always ask for this or want that. It was always money, 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 or gear and equipment for this cause or that cause. Things never got said, and what he said it was for never got done, or the equipment never went out. So the rumors went. I could never verify it or back it up, but you know, these rumors have been flying around forever. Now, this individual has been involved in several other incidents where lots and lots of people have gone to jail or been heavily involved with groups, and these groups have gone to jail, yet he has not. So we're going to talk about this for a little bit. Do you want to go from there, or do you want me to continue on, Gary?
Well, I'll start out, and I've had some personal experiences with this guy, and I'm going to talk about a couple of them. One of them might be a dead giveaway for those who've been around for a long time, but I was in South Bend, Indiana, in a town about 30 or 40 miles east of there. They got together a little Patriot gathering, and they invited some speakers, and I happened to be one of them, and I followed this other guy. And, you know, I've never believed in sensationalism. When I reported about Waco, I had pictures, I had documents, but I reported the truth. I didn't claim that there were foreign troops there. I didn't try and make any outlandish claims. I would only claim what I knew to be true. But this guy that preceded me in speaking, he walked up to the podium and he draped a hangman's noose over the podium. And then he began talking this sensational talk, March on Washington, we'll hang them, and all this stuff. And hey, it wasn't a comfortable taste, but then he had some reasonable things to say, too. I got to admit that. But anyway, you know, we met, and a couple weeks later, based on a telephone conversation, we decided to get together and talk. So I was staying with a friend of mine, and he was invited over there, and he came over with his two bodyguards, and they sat down, and we started talking, and I pulled out my micro cassette recorder, and I said, do you mind if I record the conversation? Because we were going to talk about some organizational things, and you know, back then I was recording everything because I was doing interviews with FBI and police and everything else. And it was just almost a habit. And I thought that this would make an interesting story, and I wanted to make sure I got things right. But he said no, so I pulled the batteries out of the recorder and put it on the table. And we talked for a couple hours, and his bodyguards sat very, very obediently. I'd compare them to well-trained watchdogs. I don't know how else to describe them. But anyway, a while later, at least on Linda Thompson's radio program, he made some claims about me that weren't true and said he had recorded that very meeting. He said I couldn't record. That's not very trustworthy, and it kind of bothered me, so we were kind of at odds. I ran into this one guy probably in 95, we were out in Arizona, and there was a gun show in Kingman, and we had gone there from Las Vegas, taken our newborn daughters down there, and went to this gun show. And it was kind of funny because this guy came up and said, can I get a picture holding your two daughters, your twins? And so he has a picture of him holding my twins. Now, that's the end of that portion of the story. Subsequently, one of the members of this group was murdered. And the charges of murder were levied against three people initially, and one was consequently dropped for some reason. I'm not sure. Now, I don't have all the facts of this, and this is mostly from recall. One guy fled, and the other guy pled to a lesser offense. The guy that was dropped off of that, now, if I have the story right, but somewhere along the line, the story I'm going to tell you is true. This guy had his guns with him, but when he saw some people come to arrest him, he fled into a pond or a swamp. And they apparently got a boat and went out and arrested him. This is the guy that would not be taken alive, by the way. But he was implicated in that murder, and I do believe that the two other people charged were the two dogs that were at my friend's house that night, the bodyguards for this guy. Subsequently, the guy was arrested and of armed bank robbery, convicted and sentenced, as best I can tell by the information available, sentenced to 7 years in prison, which he may or may have not served the entire 7 years. Whether he was released on parole or not, I don't know. But based on the discussion so far, I think you can readily understand that this guy is perfect for an informant. He's got all the background that should be questioned. Now, I'm going to read a Federal Bureau of Investigation unclassified report, and its name's, I'm going to use MG for that person. It names MG David Brian Stone, and then it shows them as doing business as Hootery. Oh, wow. So MG and David Stone are doing business as Hootery. This is right at the title of this FBI investigation report that's been unclassified. It's dated September 30th, 2008. And then as you go through here, MG keeps occurring over and over. Now, it talks about the bank robbery. This is the rumors. It will talk about the bank robbery later. But we go through this, and this guy's name keeps recurring. Now, I listened to a radio program on a different, you don't call them stations on the internet, on a different .com the other night. And a girl named Wendy from Hootery Militia, she's not from the militia, she was... is the girlfriend or wife of one of the people that's charged. And she kept mentioning MG over and over and over again, and something hit me really hard. Jesus, he's implicated as much as she says. He's implicated as much as this FBI classified report says. MG has a long history with law enforcement and released from prison on 3/15/2007 from his most recent felony conviction. He was first arrested 9/2/84 for weapons offenses by Detroit Police Department. On 10/9/85, the charge was dismissed. Oh. 7/20/98 in Hope Township, Berry County, Michigan. MG was arrested on federal fugitive absconding warrant. Subsequent to his arrest, a cache of weapons was seized from a vehicle he fled from on foot. Additional weapons charges filed against MG. A Michigan State Police patrol car was in the area of Little Cedar Lake assisting with routine hemp eradication operations. The trooper came upon a parked pickup truck parked near an unoccupied rural residence. Standing near the parked pickup truck were MG and somebody with a different last name, female. MG fled on foot as soon as he saw the marked patrol car. The trooper gave chase along with the hemp helicopter pilot. MG swam into the lake and was eventually arrested. After responding, troopers pursued him with a rowboat. Located in the pickup truck were assault rifles, survival gear, camping gear, thousands of rounds of ammunition, and correspondence with other members of the militia movement involved in criminal cases. A search warrant was drafted by Southwest Enforcement Team on 7/20/88, resulting in the seizure of additional weapons from the MG residence. On 7/22/1998, MG was charged with felony obstruction of judiciary or Congress or legislature or commission by the Wishtenaw County prosecutor. On 10/22/99, he was found guilty of absconding bond. MG failed to respond to a subpoena to provide testimony in the homicide case of fellow militia member William Gleason. That's the murder I was talking about. On 3/7/2000, MG was charged by Wishtenaw County Prosecutor's Office. Pardon me, people in Michigan, I don't know how to speak that Indian language. Prosecutor's Office with felony third-degree fleeing police, felony assault with a dangerous weapon, a vehicle. He was found guilty on 4/23/2001 of felony fleeing police officers, two counts of felonious assault with a dangerous weapon and misdemeanor obstructing an officer. MG was released from Michigan Department of Corrections supervision on 3/15/2007 after serving his maximum time allowable without parole from his 3/7/2000 arrest. Now, it implies that he did not go on parole, but I'm not sure. But this is his record. On 3/7/2000, the Dexter Great Lakes Bank was robbed. And this is the charge that he spent the 7 years for. Two vehicles fled the area with the bank after the robbery, and the lead vehicle, white Dodge Diplomat, was driven by MG. A second red U-Haul truck was driven by David somebody, an associate of MG. Both vehicles were involved in a pursuit with law enforcement, and both men were eventually arrested. The pursuing officers observed MG and Dave communicating with each other with hand signals and driving in a manner to imply they were associates during the chase. After they were arrested and identified, it was confirmed they were associates. The pursuit with MG lasted 45 minutes. During the pursuit, MG disregarded 22 stop signs, committed 3 separate felonious assaults with his vehicle on police officers, drove at speeds in excess of 90 miles per hour on dirt roads, drove recklessly past school buses, pedestrians, a bicyclist, construction workers, and other vehicles on the roadway. He was arrested after crashing his vehicle into a tree and a foot pursuit. After preliminary hearing, an additional felony charge was filed against MG. Michigan State Police and FBI went to MG's house to arrest him on that charge. At the time of his arrest, officers seized numerous weapons from MG's home. Oh, I'm getting tired of reading. Now, is this the kind of person we want to be a leader in the Patriot community? Is this the kind of person we would even trust with any position of authority or trust in the Patriot community? Go, Randy.
Not myself personally. I mean, you know, with everything you read there and what I know about the man, he's dangerous. I mean, anytime he gets involved with anything, people seem to go to jail except him. Not only that, but the man is reckless. He brings a bad name to himself. Not only that, look at what he's done. I personally, myself, have always had concerns about this man. I never really say anything about him. You know, I try not to badmouth anybody out there. But, you know, now the documents have been provided proving stuff, we can talk about it. It's public record. We can talk about this. So do you want to go ahead and state a name, or do you want me to go ahead and put his name out there for everybody?
Well, his name is Mark Gregory Kornke. I suppose a lot of you will recognize that name because he's back involved in the Patriot community, and I haven't listened to it, but I understand in talking with people that he does a number of radio shows a day or a week or something. I don't know.
Six a day. Constantly asking for money and gear and equipment still. You know, this guy makes a living off of begging online.
So what I read you is from an FBI report. Now, could it be falsified? Yes, but I doubt it because they've got arrest records. These could all be verified, and I don't see the need to waste my time pursuing that because I have no reason not to believe this based on my dealings with Mark Kornke.
You know, there's something else now. You know, we've brought up Kornke's name, and since we're out there, you know, I've also – there's been a name that's been brought up in the chat room – Casey Nethercutt. Now, I had Casey Nethercutt on the show a while back. I think the name of the show was Kidnapper, Torturer, Vigilante, Casey Nethercutt, Breaking News from Arizona. And I talked with Casey Nethercutt for about 2 or 3 weeks beforehand. Now, the individual I spoke with seems to be a lot different than the Casey Nethercutt that's out there now. But I'm not going to go into Casey Nethercutt now. I want to find out some more information about what he's doing out there. But Casey Nethercutt gave me some interesting information and actually sent me documents before I left Canada. About his court case, where he was tried by the ACLU for all of these crimes. And it was funny that one of the informants against him, a paid informant, was somebody who was very close to him and somebody who's also in the militia community. Somebody who was, unfortunately, I kind of made famous a little while ago. His name is Jack Foote. Now, Jack Foote, a while ago, he did some other things as well. You know, there was all kinds of, you know, incident reports and, you know, sitcoms that were going out about things that had happened in the desert, especially with the shooting that had happened. Many of you know this individual is Hammerdown. Now, as I was looking at these documents, I myself, you know, they kept saying, you know, JF, JF. And eventually the name at the top of it, though, where it was said witnesses, I looked back up and referenced that it was Jack Foote, so I started looking up Jack Foote. Found out, a.k.a. Hammerdown. So for those of you who think that they're not out there, they're very much out there.
Now, let me say something about Kornke. I have, for 20 years, only spoken badly of one patriot. Her name was Linda Thompson, because she ragged me so much I had no choice. I want you to understand that I am not bad-mouthing Mark Kornke. I am reading facts and telling of my personal experiences. Any judgments or conclusions you come to are your own. Facts are facts. What I have read is facts. What I have told about my experience with Mark Kornke are facts. If anybody wants corroboration, Dave is out, my friend in South Bend is out of the Patriot community, but I'm sure he would be glad to write it up and exactly what happened that night that I mentioned. I don't have a picture of my daughters. He never gave me the copy. He promised me. But people can speak about how he spoke back then that saw him speak in person with the hangman's noose. It was his trademark, the hangman's noose. Now, this is the image we don't need in the Patriot community, but these are facts. And so I just want to make that clear that I am not bad-mouthing a Patriot. There's only been the one instance in 20 years.
All right. Darren. He says he's got some other information about somebody you had mentioned just a minute ago. So, Darren, you still there?
Yes, I'm here.
Your turn.
Right, Darren, you had gotten some information you said about somebody we talked about a little bit earlier.
Yeah, Roger that. Joe Sims, at the time I was not aware that he was working with the FBI. When Charles went on the run after his house was burned. And Joe was very aware of the fact that I had been out to Oklahoma to meet with Charles and his family, and that, you know, I supported the young man in his videos, and although I don't think he always makes the best decisions in the world, I don't believe that he would ever hurt anyone. And Joe was aware of this fact. So he called me on the telephone when Charles had been missing for about a week. And this was right in the time, now that I've, you know, gone through all the documents that have been made available, as well as the two news broadcasts that Joe has personally appeared in, admitting that he absolutely brought these men down. Again, using the defense, Gary, that you said, you know, that he was protecting his country. But he called me on the telephone, and now apparently Joe had not worked in quite a while, about a year and a half. He didn't have a driver's license. But he called me on the phone and said that he would drive to Florida right now. He had the cash and would pick me up, and we would go out to Texas and bring Charles in safely, making the assumption that I knew where Charles was. When I found out about Charles going on the run, the first thing I did was contact a well-established local attorney and explain to him that what I wanted, if Charles contacted me, I would like for this guy to negotiate his safe return so that there was no gunplay involved, because I knew that many people were concerned that he would be violent. I knew he wouldn't, but that doesn't mean the police knew he wouldn't. So Joe said that he would take me out there, and I explained to him, you know, Joe, I don't even know what state to go to, much less what town. I've had no contact with him. And he said, okay, well, if anything changes, you let me know right away. Now, you have to imagine how this would work. We would secretly go out to meet with Charles and bring him in safely. Do you believe for one moment that the federal agents would allow us to take him anywhere? As soon as the meeting was arranged, the SWAT teams that would descend on us in a very excited manner would be overwhelming. That I take personally, because SWAT teams are not trained to de-escalate a situation. They're trained to violently respond to a threat. Shortly after this call came in, of course, the federal agent showed up at my house for the second time. And many people who know me know that the feds have been making friendly visits to us on two different occasions. One was over the Charles Dyer thing. And I suspect, and I have no evidence of this, but I suspect their first visit was because of something that Mr. Sims had said to whoever his handlers were in Georgia. And they came to interview Amelia and state that, you know, they'd read through all of her writings on the internet, and that she was very, very thoughtful, and they saw no problem with her, but because of her position and my position, we were more likely to come in contact with dangerous people. And would we be so kind as to let them know if we ever encountered anyone that caused us concern? I, you know, and without being a complete smartass, you know, I had to tell them that, you know, that being an informant is probably the last thing on my wish list of any kind, even if someone calls me concerned. I told him that most of the people, of course, that they read about, if they're doing this on the internet, most of the people are keyboard commandos, and there's a lot of hot air and talk and bluff and bravado going on. But if we ever had a problem, we would probably handle it internally by exposing the person and discrediting them within the Patriot community. But regardless, Mr. Sims did not have the interest of his country foremost in his mind when he did this. He had the interest of getting out from under the charges, because we know that he was contacting the FBI for 3 months while he sat in jail, attempting to tell them, hey, I've been in the Patriot movement for 20 years and I know everyone. He failed the first polygraph and they disregarded him. And eventually, for whatever reason, he was able to convince them that he could help them. So, Gary, you know, I know you were kind in your how you at least provided the option that he was trying to do something for his country, but the evidence indicates he certainly was not, and he was not trying to assist Charles either. He was trying to throw me under the bus and get, I guess for lack of a better term, get his creds with the feds at that time.
Well, back at that time too, Darren, when you were trying to help Charles Dyer, I have never met you, but we've talked many times, and I trusted you, so I was willing to put your announcement out in all my distribution lists because I thought it would help Charles Dyer if he contacted you. Fortunately, he found a safe way to come in, and I think on one of your programs in the near future, we're going to hear more about Charles coming in safely. But we have never met, Daryl, and I've seen pictures of you, and I got to say, you're ugly, but I'm sure it's the camera, just like it is in my case, because I look ugly because of that damn camera. But someday I'm going to meet you, and I look forward to it.
Roger that, Gary. It's absolutely terminal ugliness. There's not a damn thing I can do about it. One thing I know you've seen photographs of Amelia, and she wears glasses, and I bless her 2600 vision every day.
I don't know what to say after that, man. That's a hard one to follow.
Speaking of her, I'm sorry to interrupt, guys. Speaking of her,
go ahead.
She just joined me and stated that she had a question. They're discussing Mark Kornacki and Joe Sims at this time.
Okay.
Do you mind taking her question?
No, not at all. And then we've got one last thing from Sleepy Salsa, and then I've got a final question before we close out.
Okay. I've talked to Gary about this before, and it's, you know, Joe Sims' rationale for this whole thing is that he was just trying to save innocent people. And
Amelia, let me interrupt you.
Okay.
You weren't listening to the program. What's wrong with you? We discussed that already.
You already discussed the
yes,
line.
Yes, I remembered our conversation, and I promised you I would bring it up, and we did.
Okay,
and
ignore
yes,
me.
It was the lack of integrity in him not dealing with it. We talked about how he could have dealt with it if he was sincere. And I concluded that conversation with a simple statement. Joe Sims, if you're listening, you got your head up your ass.
So. Okay. Because, you know, I mean, and that kind of hit me hard because, you know, when I started thinking about his rationalization for it, I thought, you know, I mean, honestly, if you were put in a situation where you really did know of a plan that you could not stop that was going to cost thousands of innocent lives, I would think you would need to tell someone. You know, but defining the parameters of that and how you go about that are kind of a complicated thing.
Well, what undermines that absolutely, though, is the fact that he arranged for them to buy certain materials from an FBI or a government
right.
agent.
Right.
So obviously he was not trying to stop it. He was trying to encourage their activity to the point that they would be charged with a crime. So,
right.
you know, that act in itself negates the whole thing. But we talked about, you know, to talk him out of it. If you have to steal the goods that he's going to do it with, if you have to take him out in the woods and shoot him, the
right.
last resort, if there's no time remaining and he's on his way to do something, is to call the cops, give them the complete information and suggest that they shoot to kill.
Right. All right. I'm very sorry. I wasn't listening. I had a phone call, and I was trying to get them off so I could come.
Well, I think that's a point that should be taken twice. You know, if you run into that situation where the risk is going to broad people, not a directed risk, that you have an obligation to this country to not allow something that's just random act of violence rather than a directed act of violence to keep it from occurring. And you have to do everything within your means, but you should try and do it within your own body if you can. If you can't, the last resort is cops.
Right. Yeah, and also, you know, I mean, anybody who cares about the image of militias and of the Patriot movement, I think also that part needs to be thought about as well. Because if you run to the police or the media or whoever about something that's going to trash us all once again in the national view, where you could have taken care of it yourself, then you're just as bad as the people who are spreading horrible propaganda against us, because you're giving, you know, you're adding fuel to the naysayers' fire.
Which is exactly what the government wants.
Yeah. So, all right. Well, thank you, and I'm sorry once again.
It's okay. I think it's worth addressing that twice, Amelia. Thank you.
Thanks.
All right, Sleepy, you still there? Wake up.
Yes, I'm here. I have to mention, though, that is just completely depressing hearing that about Mark Kornke. I mean, Randy, I know I've talked with you before on previous broadcasts about the less than handful of things I actually listen to, and I'm just going to admit right now, one of them was Mark Kornke's intelligence report.
Oh, sorry to hear that.
Oh, crap.
Did you send him anything?
No, don't worry about that. Although what's funny is that, and I'm going to take the heat for this one, so whatever, I posted a link to the intelligence report earlier in the chat, and something that people should notice that actually wasn't there fairly recently was this supposed chip-in thing for Hatari, supposedly. And, like, right now there's only, like, $484 in there. I'm thinking, like, why is he pushing this? And even on a couple of his broadcasts, he started pushing it more and more. It's like, why? There's so much other stuff you could work on. There's no reason to even get involved with that.
People.
Well, now, Wendy was on Darren's show last week. And she's, you know, the government is hard on people and hard on their families. Even when they're not been convicted, they'll not put them in a facility this close to where the family is. They'll make it hard for the family. So the family's got to travel just to visit. If they were breadwinners, they've lost their job. So contributions. Now, the email address that's associated with that chip-in account, I did verify, belongs to Wendy. They need the money for the gas, and gas has just went up 20 cents again, or another 10 cents a few in the last couple of days. They need the money. Now, why did Kornke put it up there? Well, Kornke, like anybody that is on the wrong side, is going to endear themselves to the Patriot community. So by putting them up there, that up there, he's put a flag up there that says, look, I'm a good guy. I'm trying to help these people. I don't know why he's not in jail with them, but he's trying to help them. But if accusations might come against me, what better thing to do is try and deflect those accusations by saying, look, I'm trying to help these people. He didn't set up the chip-in. He just posted the link there. So that understood, you know, endearing people, trying to appear like the good guy, is not always necessarily what it appears to be.
Right, and I just kind of want to bring that up because I was just trying to kind of figure out how all this was just hanging together. But, yeah, I just wanted to kind of state again, that is just completely depressing. You know, I've already been kind of narrowing down, you know, who I listen to just because of other problems or redundancy or whatever the problem is. But, yeah, I just want to kind of bring that to everybody's attention. And while I'm on for just the last quick second, I just want to give a quick shout-out to Tomahawk. Hey, buddy.
I want to say something right now. Hi, Ohio frontiersman. Send the dollar to Randy. He needs it.
You see, you stole my thunder there. That's what I was going to say. Now send him my dollar.
Well, he didn't say just the first one, so you can say it too, and that's $2 he owes you.
All right, now I got a couple of questions here I wanted to close out with from Chuck or AZ. His first question was, is this. So with all this information we talked about, you know, and basically showing how, you know, at least three people right off the bat that we know of out there that are, you know, Patriot celebrities in one form or another have actually turned out to be informants or working with the government or snitching people out on the government. How do we choose good leadership in the militia and committees of safety?
I posted a link to Thoughts on Leadership. And let me see if I still know that. You have to think things out. Does he bring the thoughts together? Committee of Safety, we talked about it on the other show earlier on, Amelia's show. People have to find their common interest, and in the process of doing that, they're going to find somebody that just seems to be able to grasp all the ideas and help moderate disagreements and make things come together. That's the perfect leader. He's the one that can bring everybody into, or nearly everybody, in, at least into consensus. It's not the one that waved the flag and said, gather around me necessarily. It could be, but we've got to be more critical in our thinking and not vote for this guy because he waved the flag and said, gather around me. You just have to judge the people you're with, the purpose, your goals, and see if he appeases everybody by finding that middle ground. That's what's important, because the movement is not the one person, it's the group itself. And so that one person has to coalesce these ideas from the group and make them manifest in practice. I don't know how much further to go on that, but you have to have a leader. And Sleepy knows from our discussion, we talked about leaderless resistance, and some people seem to think leaderless resistance has no leader. It has no external leader. And so I told him about our security team. When it was about me, the people that picked up the ball and said, this is what we're going to go do for you, Gary, they were in command, not me. I listened to them. They took that operation, and they conducted it, and I put it in their hands. If I questioned something they did, I would say so, but the final decision was theirs. Likewise, in another situation in that group, I brought somebody in, and part of the group was never brought into what we were doing. I brought in people as necessary, but I was in charge and nobody questioned mine. However, they might offer a suggestion that was better than my idea, and I accepted it. This is working together. This is teamwork. This is how it has to be for things to work, whether it be a militia unit, a committee of safety, or Sleepy's told me about the Tea Party type groups that he's gone to. They're not organized. They don't know where they're going. They just have the person that waved the flag first in charge. And so all you got to do, I guess I had to talk about the picture, Sleepy. What do you think? Sleepy found somebody who's going to draw something for me, and it came from a phrase that I was using in an article I'm writing right now. And the bottom line is, use your brain for something other than holding the top of your skull off of your spine. So he found a guy that I hope is going to draw me a cartoon character of a hairline that goes the top of the head that goes around the eyes, then up and around the ears, back down around the jaw, and then down to the neck, and then back to the back, leaving the entire area where the brain is supposed to be outside of the skull itself. If we don't use our brains, we're going to find ourselves in trouble. And that's what's happened to all these people. They haven't used their brain for other than holding the skull off the top of their spine. What we've talked about tonight, these are simple things. Now, I've had, I guess, an advantage of being involved as long as I have, and a lot of my experience came from traveling around the country when I was talking about Waco. But in conversations with people, I pick up these ideas, and I try and put them together. Again, I'm not a leader. I don't want to be. I'd be glad to be an advisor because of my experience, but it's thinking things out. Finding solutions to problems is how we get things done. DD214, I saw in the chat a while ago, somebody said DD214, that's a great idea. Everybody, when they get discharged, gets five copies. I don't know if I got five or not, but I know I got them, and if I want another one, it's not hard to get. All I got to do is call VA. Now I would go online, give certain information and an address, and they'd mail them to me, I guess. DD214s are easy to get, and so that's a good starting place. And an application. Maybe some of the Patriot groups ought to get together and start thinking about what kind of application do we want for militia? What type of application do we want for committees of safety? What kind of application do we want for any type of group? And develop one. Don't be afraid to ask questions. They ask you if you want a job, if you want electric turned on in your house, you want water to your house, you want sewer to your house, you want television service to your house. You answer all these questions. Why not answer them for the people that you have empathy towards and you want to be a part of? Is there some reason we can't ask these questions when the phone company can? Let's not be foolish. Let's ask the questions. Get them in writing, get them to sign them, and evaluate then that piece of paper that sits in front of you versus the conversations you have. Check out a few things. Use your head. Leadership is the people that will pull these ideas together and manifest them into something productive that minimizes the possibility of infiltration and maximizes the potential for exposing informants. Now, if I could understand what the letters were, I would know what Randy was saying.
One other thing, Gary, before we close out, because we're already a little bit past. Waco, Quartzsite, Ruby Ridge, the gentleman, the Marine down in Arizona, Guerna. And we've had a lot of stuff happen to.
And as soon as blood shed, I'm going to do something.
We got a lot of stuff going on out there. This is the last question. We got a lot of stuff going on out there. We've had a lot of losses, let's say. How do we start getting wins? And the specific part of that question was, how do we start getting nonviolent wins?
You asked this with little time left in the show.
Hey, you know me. I put you on the spot, man.
Can there be nonviolent wins? Let's go back to 1770s when millions, in today's dollars, millions of dollars of tea were dumped in the harbor. And I read something interesting the other day that I didn't know before. The next day, rowboats went into the harbor to sink any clusters of tea that were still on the surface or any chests that were still floating. It was absolute and total destruction of millions of dollars worth of property. That's violence. Tarring and feathering resulted in death. Can we do any less than that? But the problem is, how are we going to decide what to do? Well, you can't do it in committee because any member of the committee could be an infiltrator, an agent, or an informant. But what has to be carefully considered, and if you read the plan for restoration of constitutional government, it talks about targeting. Bottom line, those brave souls that will get the ball rolling in this restoration of constitutional government are going to go out and break the laws. They are going to direct violence in the proper direction. But that proper direction has to be evaluated, calculated, determined to be absolutely a fit for targeting for that form of violence. There is no way we're going to get this country back without violence. Believe me.
Now, before we close out, I'm going to throw in my two cents on that one. 4 years ago, Gary, when I first met Gary, I met him on, what the hell was it? Where did I meet you at, Gary? Republic? What was it?
RTR?
RTR. What the hell was, what's it stand for? I forgot.
Restore the Republic, Gary Franchi's page.
That's right. Restore the Republic, Gary Franchi's page. I met Gary about 4 years ago. Four and a half? Has it been that long?
I don't know. I'm too old to count. I lost my fingers.
Shit, man. It's been a long time.
We've been friends. We've had hundreds of, or if not thousands of hours of conversation.
So 4 years ago when I first met Gary, the first 3 weeks I spent talking with Gary was basically 3 weeks of heavy, intensive debate. Now, anybody who's heard Gary on the broadcast or heard Gary in a debate knows that this is a very surmounting obstacle to get over. And our conversations lasted anywhere from 6 to 12 hours at a time. I mean, 6 hours was a short day. And after that 3-week period, Gary had approached me with the idea that there was no peaceful solution to this problem. We had tried everything, and all peaceful resolutions had been failed. And I argued that point. And 3 weeks later, now I don't know if Gary actually conceded this point or not, but 3 weeks later I told him we have not tried everything because we have not done what the Founding Fathers did. We did not try the Committees of Safety. We have not tried an olive branch petition. This is where the You Have Treaded Me document came from. This is where the big push for the Committees of Safety came from, because we have not tried all peaceful resolve. Now, the You Have Treaded Me document is available in a couple places. It's available at www.committee.org. You'll find out the You Have Treaded Me document there. And it's available at the top of this website. You'll see a link for it up there. It is the link that says the petition. Our Founding Fathers put forth a petition, an olive branch petition to the king, their last final peaceful resolve. They figured at this point, if they sent this to the king would either accept it and peace would be restored, or he would deny it or ignore it, and then people would finally come to terms with the fact that there was no longer a peaceful resolve. That was the reason that we came out with the You Have Treaded Me document, our last-ditch peaceful resolve. That's why we started pushing the Committees of Safety, a last-ditch effort to create that peaceful resolve, to create that overt group, as Joe Martino likes to call them, that he says are vitally necessary. Now, everybody knows me. I strive for a peaceful resolve in all things, much like Jefferson. He strove for peace up until the very last shot of the Revolution. Now, none of us want to see bloodshed in the streets. None of us want to see tanks in the streets. None of us want to see tyranny either, though. And this is where we come upon the problem. Our Founding Fathers left us a blueprint. It was the only plan in the history of the world that I've been able to find that actually freed a people from an empire of tyranny. And it worked for them. I've always had this belief that if the wheel isn't broken, don't try to fix it. And everybody comes up with these little ideas that divert from these two concepts that the Founding Fathers left us, the Committees of Safety and the Militia. So if you want to know how you can get some wins in our back pocket and chalk up a couple for the home team, look at what the Founding Fathers did. Look at the two organizations they operated through, and follow their actions and their blueprint. It worked once. And they left it for us because they knew that tyranny would always rise its head. You know, Jefferson had said, we need to clear our government out every 100 years because by then it will become totally and utterly corrupt. Our Declaration of Independence says that when government ceases to be beneficial for the people, that it is our duty, our right, to abolish, change, absolve, dissolve, create new government. And we've done this 3 times now. We had the Committees of Safety. We had the Articles of Confederation. The latest version we have of U.S. government is the Constitution. And there's always room for version 3.5 or 4.0. But that would be up to a Continental Congress to decide, and then a Constitutional Convention. But we can't even get there until we have Committees of Safety, because you cannot have a lawful Continental Congress without Committees of Safety everywhere. So you want to know how you can do this peacefully? Well, the only chance you have to do this peacefully is by engaging in the blueprint and the plan that the Founding Fathers left us, Committees of Safety and Militia. Get out there, organized. Get it within your community. Get people active. Because if not, if the government has no reason to fear the people, we will definitely be fearing the government in more ways than one. So I hope those two answers, differing opinions. But in the end, if we don't do anything, then it will come down to basically what Gary said. We'll have no choice.
Well, let's look at the differing opinions, Randy. We both look at the same subjects, and we pretty much agree on the necessity of those subjects, but let's put them in perspective, and this is something I learned a long time ago. There are always two legitimate stories to any situation. Committees of Safety, no, they weren't there for violence. They were there for peace. However, New York, Boston, and in Charleston at least, the committees of safety were not advocates of the Sons of Liberty who went out and did nasty things in the night. But there's no doubt in all three cases that members of the Committee of Safety outside of the Committee of Safety were advocates of the activity of the Sons of Liberty. So the Committee of Safety was not advocating violence, but members of the Committee of Safety were advocating violence. Boston Tea Party is another example. Committee of Safety would not accept any responsibility for it. However, Sam Adams' involvement is almost incontestable. To say the committees of safety is a peaceful solution, that's true for the side of the people that think there's a peaceful solution. But it's equally true from a different side for those that realize that there is no peaceful solution, who take it out of the committee of safety to carry out the violence. Now, the petition. The petition has two sides. There were people, especially in Philadelphia, Pennsylvania, who said, no, there's a peaceful solution. Even though hundreds of lives have been lost by now, there is a peaceful solution, and we've got to pursue that. Then there's the other side, John and Sam Adams and a few others, who said, these idiots will not get it through their head that there is no peaceful solution. So let's do the olive branch petition. So, Randy, see, you're on the Pennsylvania side of the petition, and I'm on the John Adams side of the petition. But we agree on the petition. It's beautiful.
Petition, and we agree on the outcome if nothing is done.
Right, and nothing will be done. But, see, I know nothing will be done. I think you do, too.
I hope something is done.
What, if we had, say, 3 million people sign the petition and submit it to Congress, that would be at least 9 million copies in Congress? You think something would happen?
I think we need more than that.
Well, let's get them then. But we're going to do something soon. I mean, getting 3 million would be almost a daunting task to begin with.
So, everybody, you want to start doing something? The first step, go up to the top of the page right there, the petition. Download it, sign it, send it to your representative, send it to your two senators and your congressmen. Hell, send it to anybody in your government that you want to. Let everybody know. Start there. Put that in the hands of everybody that you know. Start there. If you do not want to see the outcome that our founding fathers and eventually ended up going through, will it happen? I hope not. Is it a possibility that will happen? Power never gives up power. There has never been a dictator that's been voted out of office. But we have to try.
Well, maybe you are on my side on the petition then.
Well, of course I am. How long did we work on the damn thing for?
trying to me is a token gesture for people to realize the futility of trying.
Jefferson tried, but the last shot was fired, man.
But yes, we need to do something, and what we need to do is get our numbers up. We need to get committees of safety. We need committees of safety to circulate the petitions. We need Oath Keepers to circulate the petitions. We need Tea Party people to circulate the petitions. We need Ron Paul supporters to circulate the petitions and get those numbers. It would be a lot better. But I do not discourage anybody, Boston, New York, or Charleston, who led the way, from beginning to realize that part one of the plan for restoration of constitutional government is there, and there's no reason to wait as long as you're careful in what you're targeting. No Atlantis. But maybe yes to Boston Tea Parties, because that did not discourage the people in the other parts of the colonies, nor did the tarring and feathering. So, that said, do the petitions. I did mine. Look, I know what they're for, but I did mine. I did mine after I wrote it. They went out to these two stupid women in California and one guy. I forgot who the guy was. Boxer. Who's the other one? I can't even think right now. Pelosi.
I sent several letters. I sent mine to the two senators in New Mexico. I sent it to my congressman, and then I decided that I was going to send it to the rest to four or five other congressmen in the state of New Mexico. Then I sent it to the mayor and the lieutenant, or to the governor, the lieutenant governor, and the mayor of Albuquerque. Hell, send it to whoever you want. Send it to them all. Hard copy. Hard copy only. No emails. hard copy, hand deliver if you can.
Yeah, there's two PDF versions of the petition. One is 4 pages long. It's big enough to read. The other one is 2 pages where you print one page on each side of a piece of paper, and it's got the entire text. And it's not hard to read, but it can be read. You know, I can read it with my old eyes. I just got to squint a little bit or hold it further away. But the two-page petition is one sheet of paper, and that's the one that is recommended for submission so that everything's on that single signed piece of paper. And let's support the paper companies and get millions of those in so we realize the futility of thinking that they will undo the damage they've caused.
And form committees. Better get your committees going. Our founding fathers led them to a, you know, they enacted those for a reason. Train, train, train. Put on a good public face and stop screaming about FEMA camps. Go out there and talk to your neighbor about what concerns them, what their worries are. If it's the education system, start there. If it's taxation, start there. If it's police brutality, start there. But find out what your neighbors are concerned about and talk to them about the security of their family. Talk to them about what this country once stood for and ask them if they still think this country stands for that. Forget the Mason and Illuminati conspiracy theories. Forget 2012. Forget all this other crap that none of us can prove, like Masons and all this other reptoid, alien, human hybrid, Obama is a clone of Akhenaten crap that's all over the Patriot radio. You want to do something productive. Go talk to your neighbors. Sign that petition and send them to everybody you can think of. Form a committee of safety. Hope that answers your question, Chuckers. Or Chuck AZ.
Was there one more question you had?
That was it. Oh, also, Ohio Frontiersman. Hi, how you doing? Send me my buck.
It's $2 you owe Randy.
$2. $2. Well, listen, everybody, we are 30 minutes past the 11 o'clock schedule, so we went a little bit over tonight, but I thought we had a great show. You know, I hope that, you know, by us bringing to light these three individuals, you know, one of them wasn't even planned to be talked about, but I saw Casey Nethercott's name popping up, and I decided I'd bring in that third one, Jack Foote, Hammer Down. You know, anybody who wants to see those documents, all you got to do is look up Casey's Casey Nethercott's case file number. Request those documents, and you'll see Jack Foote's name all over it as an informant, paid informant at that. I no longer have a copy of those documents. I had to leave them in Canada when I came down here. That wasn't it was a rush move and not by my choice, but hey, it's what it is. But, you know, I saw them, so I'm comfortable saying, you know, calling him out as well. So think about this as you're going out there. Now, in the meantime, though, you got to trust people. You got to do your thing. But be looking out. Think about these things that we talked about tonight. Know who you're dealing with. Start with your friends and family. Start with your neighbors. Go from there. And with that being said, everybody, listen, I've got several requests in the chat room as well for show topics. You want a specific show topic, you let me know. I've yet to not be able to produce a show that from anybody that's ever requested it from me. So you want to hear something on this broadcast, you let me know. You want me to bring a guest on, I'll talk to them. If I feel that they're in line with this broadcast and what we try to promote here, which is non-conspiracy theory, non-hype and agenda, buy my latest video to find out how to solve the world's problems by Alex Jones, then I'll talk to them, and I'll try and get them on. If you have any questions, concerns, comments, email me, randymack@uoftredemy.com. And by this weekend, you're going to see a new look to the website up here. And our past archives will begin to be going up as well. I'll start with the most recent ones that we've done and start working my way back, including the year and a half or so that I was on Blog Talk. So we're going to get all those back up here and everything. We'll have a separate page for these as well. So if you have any questions, give me a call. Or give me an email, randymack@uoftredemy.com. Join the Committee of Safety mail list. If you need help forming a Committee of Safety, feel free to contact me. randymack@uoftredemy.com or hit Gary Hunt up. You can find his contact information at the committee.org site or at outpost-of-freedom.com. And remember, if you don't do something, don't expect, you know, there are no white knights coming to save us. Ron Paul is not coming to save us. This is up to we the people. Forget the politicians. This is up to we the people. Take this to the local level. With that being said, everybody, be safe, be free.
Wait. I get the final words. You always ask me, and now you're not going
to
ask me?
Oh, anything else to say, Gary?
Yes. Come to think of it, yes. I just hope that the conversation we've had tonight, it was kind of a spur-of-the-moment thing, came up because of recent incidents. But I do hope the show tonight has got you thinking about some things, and I do hope that you, even more, that you don't stop thinking about them when we say good night. Good night, and thank you for coming.
Yes, everybody, thank you for listening in, and again, I appreciate everybody that's listened in over the years. Like I said, we're starting off pretty much from scratch again, so I'm building up the listener base again. But again, you know, how successful this show is depends upon you. If you think this show is valid, if you think that we provide worthwhile information and a plan that actually provides solutions instead of just selling you hype and fear, then tell your friends. Tell anybody you know. Hell, download the archives like several other people do and start handing them out. Post them on your website. Put my player wherever you want. I don't care. This is your info. Send it to whoever you want to. Put it out there however you want. You know, if we got a million people listening in on this broadcast, you would see some change in America. We'd have a million people that actually started doing something and actually started working towards a plan and a goal. So, with that being said, everybody, be safe, be free. If you've got any questions, comments, concerns, want to tell me I'm full of it, hit me up at an email, randymack@ufotreadme.com. Be safe, be free. I'm out.